Zorbapastor on your health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorbapastor on your health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorbapastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. But Zorba, you've been keeping it real for as long,
yeah, I have. That's
long
right.
as I can remember.
That's right. I've been real for a long
you've been
time.
Real for a long
and
time.
I'm still real.
Still
that's
real.
Right. I am here.
We'll talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails as well. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, Zorba, we're going to discuss a few healthy living topics.
Yes, we're going to talk about getting more light in the day and less light at night might be good for your health. Some circadian rhythm issues that I think are important for anyone to think about, especially during the dark days of winter when things can get a little bit testy.
Mm-hmm.
And memories are not only in your brain. Who knew?
Wow.
Who knew? You have memories in other parts of your body. We'll talk about that. Interesting, provocative research.
Yeah. How about that recipe?
Paella. I love paella. I've been to Spain numerous times. I'm in Argentina, which also has great paella. This is a mushroom and red pepper paella. If you ever have had paella, if you ever want to make paella, this recipe is for you.
Sounds great. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's welcome a caller now from Cyclone, Missouri. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help you?
Well, I'm sure you've heard of hot flashes, and I've heard of hot flashes.
Of course.
But I'm having cold flashes.
Really? Huh.
It's happened twice now, same time, 5 a.m., about a week apart.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, I woke up. I was shivering so bad, I could barely move. Could hardly get out of bed.
Wow!
When I got up, I shivered. And, you know, I had to go to the bathroom. Then I came back and laid down. Well, first I checked the temperature in the room. I thought maybe a cold front had moved in overnight. This was back when it was really hot here. You know, and sometimes that happens.
A
you know,
cold
get
front.
Real cold in here,
a cold front in your bedroom. That would be something. That's right. Is a move. But if the windows are open, sure, definitely a cold front. But it wasn't that, I assume.
No, I checked the temperature in the room was 85 degrees.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm like, you know, because it'd been like almost 100 that day, and I don't have any air conditioning, so. But it was like 85 degrees, and I'm shivering. It's the kind of shivering you get when you're approaching hypothermia.
Sure, sure. That's
so,
it.
So I couldn't control it, but I got some covers out and got underneath them, and took about 20 minutes. It finally warmed up enough. I went back to sleep.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And now the next time it happened, it was about a week, 10 days later, same thing, same time, 5 a.m. I wake up shivering so bad I can hardly move. I checked the temperature in the room. It was 75 degrees that time. And the difference was this time it took about an hour for me to warm up enough to where I can go back to sleep. And then during the day, which hadn't happened the first time, I was, I don't know really how to describe it. I really had this feeling for it. It was like I was trying to move underwater.
Got
in other
you.
Words,
got
I didn't hurt. I didn't have pain.
Wow.
I didn't really feel tired even. I couldn't get my body to move.
Got you.
And I was that way all day long. So, and then it hasn't happened since. And I was just wondering if you've ever run across that
well,
before.
Well, so any medication that you're on, any medicines that you take on a regular basis?
Right. I take Xtandi every day. But that's not one of the listed side effects.
Xtandi.
Hot flashes are.
What is Xtandi? I'm not familiar with that. Xtandi.
Okay. Xtandi is a testosterone suppressant.
Oh, okay.
I've got bone cancer.
Okay. So you've got bone cancer from your prostate, right?
Right,
from your prostate. So that may be part of the issue. There are a couple of things that are involved. Because my first thought is, you know, when you've got shivering and it happens suddenly out of the blue, the first thing we think about is infection or inflammation. So either infection or inflammation. Because all of a sudden your body says, hey, I've got to mount an immune response. I've got to increase the temperature to do it. That's what happens with our body when we shiver. And so the question would be whether or not anything was happening in your body body that is producing it. And sometimes you can have urinary tract infections, very common, especially in men, also common in men who've had prostate issues, that may be going on. So I would ascribe this, I'm not sure at all, I would ascribe it either to whether or not you had an infection in your prostate or an infection in your bladder, or whether or not this is related to the bone cancer that you have. You know, and you're on, as you said, a testosterone, depressant, and whether or not what you're doing is getting some sort of an issue with the inflammation there. That would make a lot of sense to me. And that's it. So, but I want to go a little bit further. So that day, the second time you felt like you were tired, as you said, swimming, things are not going well, that then resolved the next day?
Right. It only lasted one day. The next day I was back to normal.
Back to normal. How long ago did that happen?
This has been about 4 weeks.
About 4 weeks.
Or 5 weeks.
Okay. So if you had called me up and you're my patient and you had prostate cancer, first thing I'd said is, okay, if it happens again, what we've got to do is see whether or not you've got an infection. I would immediately check your urine. I would do a urinalysis, and then I'd consider a urine culture, because that's where I would look. I might also do a blood count when it actually occurred to see whether or not your blood count went way up. And I would want to do it when that occurred. So if it recurs, what I think you should do is, you know, you've got a doc, call up your doc or do it on the electronic medical record. That's even better. Give a short history of this and say, I'm not sure what this is. Do you want to check my urine if it happens again and do a blood count? And if that were the case, and if it happened, I would do the next morning, I would go in and get that checked and I would see if there's anything abnormal. I think this, once again, may be related to the prostate issue and the medicine that you're on. And that's what I think. The fact that it's gone away is really good. But your body was shivering to increase the temperature because there was some sort of inflammatory process going on. That's my diagnosis.
Okay, great. I'll mention that to my oncologist next time I see him.
That's very good. And once again, what I would do is if I were your primary care doc, I would say, look, it happens again. I want to get blood and urine check right away after it happened, because that's going to give me some information on what's going on. And you're going to see your oncologist soon, so give him or her my best.
Okay.
Even though I don't know them. But they're really good. Oncologists and the treatment of prostate cancer is so much better now than it was years ago. So, and a good relationship with your oncologist means you're going to get the best care.
Right. I mean, he's already got my PSA down from 428 to less than one.
So. Wow. Good. Very good. And you know something? We treat prostate cancer now as a chronic disease. We think of it just like heart failure. We can treat it as a chronic disease and give people better hypertension, diabetes. And there are many people with prostate cancer who are treated well, who basically, they get treated and they live long, productive lives. So congratulations. Glad that number is down so much.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. You take care now.
Bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic. Let's talk about light and how much light you need during the day and how little you need at night.
Uh-huh. So what do you think about dark nights in the winter? Do you like that?
They're depressing. However, I do keep the room really dark. Like if I go to a hotel, I'm the guy who's like, you know, covering all the clock.
Uh-huh.
I can't handle
even
any.
Even color the clocks.
Even
any
the clock.
Light.
How about
really?
Like a smoke alarm that's blinking all night? Like
really?
I think sometimes I'll even like tape that off.
I have never noticed smoke alarms in any of the rooms. A smoke alarm that's blinking?
So that's where I'm at with
that?
Light.
So when you go to sleep at night, your room must be really dark.
Dark. We have like blackout shades.
Black. Really?
Yeah.
That's all.
I love it.
So that works. That really works for you.
Yep.
So does it in the wintertime, do you get the winter sort of blues because it's dark?
Yeah.
It's along which a lot of us do.
Short days.
The real short days, you know, and I'll tell you, I don't mind cold weather, but I really do not like the dark nights. Mm-hmm. And I have some seasonal affective disorder.
Sure.
So I use an SAD light, mm-hmm. which I find useful. But the real issue is, what effect does this have on mortality? And interesting research shows there might be an effect, but cause and effect might be sort of part of it. So we think of a diet and exercise, but sleep is really important. So scientists looked at close to 100,000 people in the UK. Okay, they spent a week Wrist-worn activity monitors, you know, this is a study where, you know, kind of like now you have your smartwatch or your mm-hmm. smartphone, but they had activity monitors equipped with light sensors so they could tell how much time they spent in the day and at night. And they looked at how many people stayed up during the nighttime. And I got to tell you something. When I was in the wards in training, in medical school, and in postgraduate training, I hated fluorescent lights. I just hated them because they're up and they're light, and I hated them, and that meant I had to work hard. I mean, I remember thinking, you know, I hated Thomas Edison for actually inventing the incandescent light bulb. And I remember thinking about that because it's dark. Well, over the next 8 years, they looked at who lived and who died and did it relate to anything concerning light. And the study was published in the Procedures of the National Academy of Sciences. So that's a really, really good journal. It means it's a good journal. It means it's good science. And so what they discovered was that people who had the brightest nights, okay?
The nighttime, most light at night.
Most artificial light at night, okay? Artificial. I'm not talking about regular light summer. Appear to have 20 to 30% more likely chance of dying prematurely.
Huh.
Kind of interesting.
That's something.
The opposite was true. People who had spent more time in the daytime outside or with the brightest days appeared to have a 17% to 34% lower risk of dying.
Oh, wow.
So in other words, light at night may increase your risk of dying sooner, but light at daytime may decrease your risk of dying
sooner.
It's kind of interesting. Now, there's a lot here. You know, there's cause and effect. People who have light at night are doing more things at light. At night, they may be more stressed. They may be doing other stuff. People in daytime may be, they may be more relaxed, something, you know, they're there. So there's not really a total cause and effect. But I think it gives us pause to think about what we're doing at nighttime. So do you stay up late at night, Carl?
Yes, I'm terrible. Watch, you know, shows or movies too long.
Junk. Yeah.
Well,
junk.
You know, it's quality content.
It's quality content. That's right.
Prestige television.
That's right. Curated content, right? You're always
highly
learning
curated.
Something. Yeah. You watch nothing but PBS and the History Channel.
Just
that's
PBS.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's
just
it.
And the History Channel. You don't even watch the murders. You just don't. You want to make sure that you're always learning something.
Yeah.
That really would be stressful if you're always learning something. You never relax. But you stay up late at night. And
the
issue is, it may be that we really have to follow our circadian rhythms more. We have to think about getting up in the morning when the light is on, when we can. It might be early, so it's dark early in the morning during the wintertime. But we may think about in the evening time, especially during the winter, the use of artificial light may be bad for our health. And it may be one more thing you have to think about is maybe it's time to say, hey, I'm not going to have the light on that much. I'm going to get in bed early, and I'm going to actually read a book.
That's a novel idea right there. 800-462-7413. That's 800.
You like that, didn't you? Actually, read a book.
Really, really proud of myself. 800-462-7413. Leave a voicemail anytime. If you have a healthy living question, let's go to one of those voicemails now. This is a caller from Chautauqua, Wisconsin.
The reason I'm calling is because my husband has clogging ears, and it's been since August, and he can't get them unclogged. Does the Dr. Zorba have any idea what that could be and how we can resolve the issue? It's chronic clogging of the ears, both ears. Okay, thank you.
Well, first of all, we don't know what's going on with his ears. Now, you can go to your doctor. That's one thing you can do. Or you can go to Amazon.com, and you can get, or another website, but go to Amazon, and you can get an otoscope, a thing to look into the ear for $10, which is, obviously, less than your copay of going to the doctor.
It's like a mini camera?
You can look in the ears and see if there's wax.
Okay.
That's it.
Wax
you can look
build
in the
up,
ears.
Baby.
Hey, go to YouTube. Go to YouTube and see what his wax look like. Go to the, you know, go get the otoscope, see whether or not he's filled with wax.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you do is you get an ear wax removal kit. Now, let me tell you what's in that kit. Do you have wax problems at all?
Not really, no.
Not really, no.
Did
you ever know anyone with wax problems?
I've heard of that happening.
Yeah, you've heard of it.
Yeah,
but it's not a common thing when you're at dinner party and say, hey, I got wax in my ears.
Yeah, let's talk about earwax.
Yeah, that's right. You don't really.
Pass the cranberries.
That's right. We don't usually do that. But what happens is it's a really common thing. An ear wax removal Mobile Kit is this. You get drops you put into your ears, very simple drops you put in the ears. Kind of, you know, they're made of oil often and peroxide, and you put them in the ear. You put a little cotton ball in there to sort of dam it up. You do that a couple of times, and then you wash out your ears with lukewarm water with a little bulb syringe. And the Earwax Removal Kits give you a bulb syringe, those little things that you use to remove snot from a baby's nose.
Oh, sure. The snot sucker, we call
snot,
it.
The snot. Oh, it's so disgusting. Snot sucker. I hate that word. But these bulb syringe, better word, bulb syringe.
There you go.
And what you do is you won't put too much pressure, and you irrigate that out, and you can get the wax out of your ears.
Okay.
And you can do it. You go to a doctor's office. It's a copay. It costs money. You can do it at home. Doesn't happen necessarily the first time. With really dried wax, you often have to put drops in two or three times. Water, neither hot nor cold. If it's too warm or too cold, you will get dizzy. Mm. But you do it over the sink, and anyone can do this. And once again, YouTube is great. You can even see it on YouTube. That's what I would recommend. Save money, get rid of the clog.
Now, I'm no doctor. You're the doctor.
No, you aren't. You are
not a
doctor.
I'm not a doctor at all. Not even close.
But no, you are close. You're not that far away.
Yeah. What are we, about 4 feet apart here?
That's right.
But I did go to an audiologist once to get my hearing check. And she told me, she was great. She did tell me about these kits, you know, and she said the one thing you got to be careful of with that irrigation bulb is not to put too much pressure on it, because you could rupture your eardrum, she said.
Pretty, unless you're,
so I mean, careful.
All depends. But you're right. You have to be careful. I mean, you don't want to go,
yeah, right. You don't want to fire hose it.
But you know, if you fire hose that ear, it also is going to be painful. But you're right. Gentle irrigation. But if you read the instructions on the box, it usually tells you what to do. And once again, go to YouTube and do that. But that's the way to do it. I like the idea that you can do this without a copay.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to hear once again from your favorite.
I mean, I know who they are.
Who is
I
it?
Can
who
imagine.
Is it?
The Grammar Police. You know, I periodically get stopped on the street, really, and somebody says to me, you know, I'm a member of the Grammar Police.
They're a huge force.
But they're silent. They don't wear any badges.
No.
They don't wear any badges.
They just come out of the shadows.
That's right.
All right. The following note came to us from the Pronunciation Police.
Okay.
You know,
I'm
separate
up there.
Faction within the Grammar
I'm up
Police.
I'm up there.
Here we go.
Not the Enunciation Police.
No.
Pronunciation Police.
That's a
the
good
enunciation.
One,
we've
That'd
never
great.
Heard. I don't know if we've
no.
heard of the enunciation.
No.
Heard from the enunciation.
So we're doing
police.
Okay enunciating.
Well,
things.
I don't know. They may be out there, but they're silent. But if there's any any member of the Enunciation Police that wants to chime in, please do so at 1-800-462-7413. And state your credentials when you're doing
please,
it.
Please, always. All right. This is from Wylea in Spokane, Washington, who writes, I'm listening to your show, and you use the word umbilicus. I looked it up, and it's pronounced umbilicus. I've never heard it pronounced the way you did, and I took anatomy and physiology in college. So I looked it up, and Wikipedia pronounces it umbilicus as well.
That's right. That's
maybe
right.
If you pronounced it right, the guy next to you— I guess that's me,
right?
Would
understand that.
Yeah. Would have recognized the word. I guess I didn't recognize the
word
when you
said it. Well, we just call
it
belly button. You know, that's then you would recognize
it. So it's umbilicus and not umbilicus?
Well, it's umbilicus, but I'll tell you, if you're a Brit, you pronounce it umbilicus.
Okay.
And I came from a family on my mother's side that was British, and my grandfather pronounced it umbilicus. I mean, he taught me that word when I was young. So, you know, the British pronunciation can be different. So, you know what? 1 point for you, a point for me.
All right. Did you catch a mistake we made on the show? Send us the bill. Just post your thoughts on Facebook or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, more of your calls to come, more of your emails, and we'll put together a yummy paella rice recipe. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and there's Dr. Zorba right across the desk from me. He's looking good. He's wearing.
I'm hungry.
You are hungry.
I am hungry.
Okay.
That's right.
He's wearing a green hat with a G on it. I think that's the Wisconsin football professional football team. What are they called again?
Go Pack Go.
Okay,
that's right. That's
guys.
What they're called. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
There it is.
Have you ever been to a Packers game?
I've been to two Packer games.
I've been to
over
a bunch
the years.
Of them.
Not a whole lot.
I got to tell you, the best game to be at is the one that occurs in the middle of December, because you're sitting out there and it is super cold.
Yeah.
And you're thinking,
I did that.
Why am I out here and it's super cold? You know, you're dressed up and maybe it's like 20 degrees or 10 degrees. And for some reason, when the Packers are playing, you're like with it, mm-hmm. and you're kind of warm. And as soon as the game is over, all of a sudden people get up and you go, oh my God, it's really cold.
Then you feel it.
You
exactly.
want to get to the car. That's right.
Yeah, the last game I was at was a couple of years ago, and it was one of those 5-degree, 10-degree nights.
Right. That's
and
right.
I was
That's
holding
right.
a beer, and That's there right. were ice chunks floating in the beer.
In the beer.
It was great.
That's when you know.
It was great.
That's when you know you're a true Wisconsinite, is when there are ice chunks in the beer, and you're staying
you're
out.
Still drinking
you're
it.
Still drinking it. That's right. You're still drinking it. You got
All right.
It.
We got to get to a recipe. 800-462-7413. Call that number anytime if you have a healthy living question for the good doc. But what's our recipe? We have paella style mushroom and red pepper rice.
That's right. So we're going to talk about paella. Now, do you have a paella pan at home?
I don't.
Okay. So you can use a frying type pan for this.
Okay.
But I'll tell you something. Paella pans themselves are great to get. They're not expensive at all. Mm. And they look beautiful when you bring this to the table.
Ah, okay.
In other words, there's a presentation issue.
What shape is it?
It's a round circle.
Paint us a picture.
It's a circle.
Okay.
It's all circle with two handles on it.
Okay.
And it's wonderful. You get a little hot plate on the table, mm. you know, so you put it down on the table. Highly recommend, if you're going to make paella, get a paella pan because
okay.
it looks really good. And this is a smaller paella pan, which is about a 12-inch. That's what I would
okay.
recommend for this. Part of the pan is the fact that you really want to make sure that everything reaches to the corner. And once again, you can use a cast iron skillet if you have it, or another pan you can put in the oven, but I highly recommend you get one. And you want to get one that does not have Teflon. You want a non-stick pan.
So a stick pan.
Correct. No, that's really what it is.
Because
that's part
pan.
Of it. You don't want, because that's part of what
right.
you have on the bottom of it. It really
yeah.
does
you don't
make
want
it,
those chemicals in there, right?
Well, it's not just the chemicals. It's the way the pie is made. And I'll tell you
okay.
why.
Gotcha.
Okay. Start out with a small onion.
One small onion.
Six cloves of garlic. Bunch of mushrooms. So I use about, you know, 8 or 9 button mushrooms. If
sure.
you can get portobello mushrooms or shiitake mushrooms, you can use just one mushroom. But if you use a couple of mushrooms, I think it tastes even more robust.
All right, a bunch of mushrooms.
Okay, get a jar of roasted bell peppers. Now,
okay.
if you get a typical jar, not a huge one would be okay. There roughly are 2 peppers in there, but there might be 3 smaller peppers, but it has to be roasted red bell peppers.
Okay, jar of roasted red bell peppers. That's
you
hard
got,
to say.
You
I
got it.
It.
That's
Barely
right.
Got
you
it.
Could do it. Tongue twister, you can do it. Okay, a teaspoon of sweet, but it's smoked Spanish paprika. If you have regular paprika, it has a different flavor. You want smoked Spanish paprika. You can use regular stuff. Smoked is better with this.
All right. 1 little tea sweet smoked Spanish paprika.
2 tomatoes.
2 tomatoes. That was easy to
That's
say.
That's right. Easy to say. 3 cups of vegetable broth.
3 cups of vegetable broth.
Now, I have a recommendation for this. First of all, if I buy canned vegetable broth, let me tell you, I've never liked any of it. I get the better than bouillon
mm-hmm.
vegetable broth, or the better than bouillon, even better, the no chicken vegetable broth. So there's a no chicken. In other words, there's no chicken in it, but it has a lot of the flavoring of chicken. It almost tastes like chicken. And that is my favorite veggie broth.
Okay. We'll get that.
1/4 teaspoon, a little pinch or two of saffron.
A little bit of saffron.
Saffron is expensive.
It
we
is.
Don't use much of it. Pinch works. 1 cup of Spanish round rice. Now,
okay.
this is critical. This is not this is a special rice. It costs more, mm. but it's very important for the texture. It's very different from basmati rice. It's very different from rice that we use in sushi.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little bit of crunch to it when you make it. You've got to use the right Spanish rice for paella because it does make a difference, and the rice is costly. It's not super costly, but it costs more. You go, why am I spending like $8 for the little bag of rice? You got to do it.
Okay, 1 cup of Spanish round rice.
Fresh rosemary.
All right, fresh rosemary.
A little sea salt, a little pepper.
Okay. Oh, S&P.
That's right. So here's what you're going to do. We're going to make it. So finely chop the onion, okay? Finely chop the onion. Roughly chop the garlic. Slice the roasted red peppers. Finely grate the tomatoes. You're going to get tomato juice out of the tomatoes, okay? Wash and pat dry the mushrooms, and then cut the mushrooms into kind of thick slices, okay? Heat the pie pan with medium heat and add 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil. Very important, 1/4 cup. Measure it out, okay? At 1 to 2 minutes, put in the chopped onion and garlic mixture. Mix it with the olive oil. After 2 minutes, the onions are going to be a little translucent. Then put in the sliced mushrooms. And if it looks like the mushrooms are a little dry, add a little more olive oil. Okay, so once they're lightly sautéed, which is roughly 3 minutes, add the roasted bell peppers, the teaspoon of Spanish paprika, mix it together, then add the grated tomato, that little juice in there. You might season it with a little sea salt and black pepper, just a little bit, teeny bit, pinch of each. Mix it until it simmers nicely together. Then after 3 minutes, it's thickened up a little bit. Then add the veggie broth and a pinch of saffron threads. Raise it to high heat. Bring it to a boil. Put in the rice. Very important. Give one final mix until it's evenly distributed. Put the sprig of rosemary on top. Do not touch it.
Don't mix the rice after that. Leave it.
I got to tell you something. That is a critical point of it. You want the rice not to be mixed because it will change the texture of the paella.
Right.
So you look at it after about 9 or 10 minutes. Once again, you see the rice is absorbed, but there's still a little bit of broth left on top. And then put it up into a little bit higher medium heat until it's a little bit medium heat, because basically what you want to do is you want to give a little char to the bottom of the rice. You want it to stick.
Okay.
There's a term for that in Spanish. I can't remember exactly what it is. But you don't want it to burn. You want to just turn it up a little bit and just kind of watch it. Do not touch it. Okay?
Okay.
Just a couple minutes. Once it's absorbed, shut off the heat, cover it with foil. You can cover it with a foil, maybe a dishcloth on top of it, for 5 minutes. And then you serve it. Now, there's a lot of little steps in this particular recipe, but if you do it, you will have the best mushroom and red pepper paella I have ever tasted. Wonderful for anyone who is a vegetarian.
Sounds wonderful.
It's also vegan. Mm-hmm. It's actually a good vegan recipe. You know, I'm not a pro-vegan person. I'm sorry, vegan people. I like other stuff besides vegan.
But you're not anti-vegan.
I'm not anti-vegan. No. But this is a great vegetarian vegan recipe that will also satisfy anyone who is an omnivore.
Okay. Sounds great. And how do we get this recipe?
Well, first of all, nobody could pay attention to what I was saying on here.
There was a lot of
you got to look at zorbapastor.org. That's zorbapastor.org. And, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right. Let's go back to the phones now. Let's try to help out a caller in Evansville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. How are you folks?
Pretty good. How can we help?
My question involves my CPAP machine. I just love it. I even use it for naps, and I can't do without it. It's a great invention.
It's a great. How long have you been using your CPAP machine? How many years?
At least 12 years.
So when you were first found out, you know, that you had sleep apnea, what'd you think about that? And then you had this machine to have at home. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a transition. But the night I had my sleep study, it was actually in Florida. For 4 hours, I was choking and snoring, and they put it on for the last 4 hours, and it felt like I had slept 10 hours. It was unbelievable. So I took it.
Wow.
I took it to heart and use it all the time.
Wow. Wow.
Now my question is, I'm on television, I'm seeing these ads for these people that are tearing off their sleep machines, that they don't like them, and then they say there's a product or an implant or something.
An implant, right.
Where you don't need your CPAP machine. Is that bogus or not?
Well, first of all, it's not bogus. It's an FDA-approved. It's sort of like a pacemaker, and it works for some people, doesn't work for other people. There's certain criteria you have to meet to get insurance to cover it if you wanted to do it. I don't recommend it for anybody who's using a CPAP machine doing well. I think it costs, $10,000, $20,000. It's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get it. without insurance. And for some people, it can be worthwhile. In other words, for people who are not cared for, or not, basically, it's really for people who fail on a CPAP machine for a number of things. You've been using it for a long time. Your CPAP works. You notice the difference right away. Stay with your winning horse. That's the ultimate thing. But it is not bogus. They're actually doing, first of all, let me take it back. You may be looking at a bogus ad, but there are bogus ads. There are ads on TV that are not bogus that basically talk about this new, as I said, it's basically something that is sort of like a pacemaker, you know, to get you to breathe again. But you're doing well. You don't want to change it up. You've had it for 12 years. It's wonderful. You don't want to look at it with your insurance and everything else. But the main thing is you have discovered you sleep better and you feel good in the morning, right?
Oh, yes. It's unbelievable. Yes. I even use it for my naps.
You even
and
use
several,
it for your
several
naps.
Several members of my family have CPAP machines, too.
Right. Well, it tends to run. There are a lot of issues that can run genetically in families. It also has to do with the way the back of your throat is constructed and your neck, and it has to do with your weight. But several of other people in your family also have CPAP machines, so wonderful. And you take it with you when you travel. What do you do when you travel?
Oh, yeah, I take it with me, yes.
Yeah. Well, keep
it
up.
At the airports, they don't even open them up anymore. So many people have them.
Well, they now know what it looks like when it goes through that machine to see what it is. Yeah, when it goes through the X-ray. Yeah, they now know what it looks like. Keep up the good work. Glad.
Thank
and you.
You
and I'll
advice.
Tell you something. You're important for people to listen to on the show, because what happens is a number of people have their CPAP, and at first they go, well, I really don't like it. I don't like the sound. I've got to put this here. And they don't work with it to get the right mask and the right CPAP that works for them. And they often give up and say, forget it. It takes too much work. And you're an example of how it's worth working on to make sure it works correctly.
Oh, yes. I'm 81, and it just gives me all the energy I need. So it's working great. I just have to make sure the cannula fits tight. That's all.
Yeah, you've done it.
And it's working great. So thanks for your advice.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to voicemail now. Let's try to help out a caller in Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, I was listening and you were talking to somebody about not taking iron for anemia. And I have a grandchild, 8 years old, who I believe is on iron for anemia. And I'm wondering if the advice is different with children than it is with adults. Thanks. Bye.
So let me clarify that a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you have an iron deficiency anemia, you should take iron.
Okay.
So in other words, taking iron if you know you have an iron deficiency anemia, like with a grandchild or with an adult, is important. The particular time we were talking about it is people who just take iron and they don't have a known anemia. In other words, they take a multivitamin with iron and they're older. And the reason is if you go into your doctor's office and you have an anemia, and let's say you're 50 or older, the first thing we look at is, why do you have an anemia? Now, if you're vegan, you might have an anemia because you're not eating enough iron. But if you're that does happen. But if you're an omnivore, the first question is there an anemia? Do you have a leak somewhere? And the first thing we look at is the gut. And the first thing we look at in the gut is either from something like an ulcer or colon cancer or a polyp. Hmm. So in other words, that's why we don't give the overall recommendation is on taking iron just willy-nilly. If you have an iron deficiency anemia, the answer is iron is definitely important to take.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, we love when our listeners contribute their healthy living tips to the show. And on a recent show, we were talking about earworms. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Song stuck in your head forever.
I do.
And how to get rid of those.
That's right.
So the following tip came from Dan in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Dan writes, a professional musician who holds a master's degree from the University of Iowa told me that there is one way and one way only to get rid of music earworms. With a knowing smile and a wink, he said, there is one song that will erase any earworm. All you have to do is hum, It's a Small World After All.
Oh.
That song will get rid of anything. I believe that, too.
Is that the Disney
that's
song?
That's the Disney song.
I can just say, small, oh, that's... Oh,
yeah,
that's,
we're going to get stuck in everyone's head right
get
now.
Stuck. That's right. It's the one thing we took our kids to Disney
that
World.
Ride.
And it's that one ride you've got to go on all the time. And that ride is like, they will never take it away because it is the hit with children.
Oh,
it
man.
Is the hit with children. Yeah, I can pick... Can't you picture it right now?
Oh, yeah, we
can't
did that a couple years ride? Ago. It's just on a constant loop,
that's
that
right,
song.
Just
it's just until you don't want to hear it anymore.
And the kids love it.
Yeah.
They love it. Can we go on it again and again and again
over
and again?
And over, exactly. Okay. So that probably works.
But then you're replacing that earworm with another earworm.
Right,
that's right.
So is it a lesser of two evils situation?
No, it's the worst of two evils.
The worser,
you know,
as my daughter would say?
I'll take any of the other earworms I do not want to listen to. It's a small world after all.
Right. Do you have a healthy living tip to share? Just leave us a voicemail, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Much more of the show to come. We'll have more of your calls. We'll tackle another interesting healthy living topic and more of your emails as well. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health
from PRX.
Carl Christensen in Buck Studio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and I'm sitting right across the desk from Dr. Zorba Pastor. If you have a question for him, any healthy living question, give us a call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, Zorba, our new healthy living topic right now. You think about memories, you'd think they're usually in your brain, but we see some new research here that other parts of the body can also hold memory?
Well, other parts of the body do hold memory.
Okay.
I mean, we have to think about it. Now, it's not that other parts of the body think.
Okay.
But they hold memories. So when you think about a memory, you're thinking about your brain with a memory. But there are memories that occur that are almost like reflexes. So look at a reflex. When you get a reflex, you know, if I do a reflex hammer in your on your knee, it pops up. That's a memory. When you're skiing down a hill, when I'm skiing down a hill, I'm paying attention, but there's muscle, what we call muscle memory, right?
Right.
When you're doing a sport, what sports did you do?
I like tennis.
Like tennis.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a memory.
Sure.
Right? I mean, you're not always thinking and going obsessively about each swing.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking about what you're doing, but the swing is taking care of itself, right?
Right.
Right.
That's a memory.
I mean, that's a memory. Circadian rhythms, very important in the summer and winter, occurs with steroids, these cortisol levels that occur in our body. They give us energy sometimes. That's a memory.
Hmm.
And this particular study looked at the fact that there are a whole number of memories that occur throughout our body, kidney function, liver function, heart function, that we don't know very much about and that affect our everyday life and may affect our wellness, and we don't really think about that. So how you plan your day. When you get up in the morning, what do you like? Do you wake up right away or do you wake up slowly?
I'm a slow waker-upper.
How about your wife?
She just jumps out of bed usually.
Yeah. Now I used to kind of jump out of bed and get up right, but now I'm a slow waker upper. But I mean, I don't know if that's my brain jumps out of bed. I have this image. Pop.
Yeah.
It just jumps.
I see you jumping out of bed.
Jumping
actually.
Out of bed.
Maybe laughing a little bit on the way.
Yeah. When I jump out of bed, no, I'm not a morning person. I'm an evening person.
Okay.
Laugh.
Me too.
But
but
we have these different memories that we don't think of, and these memories really affect our health and our wellness. So that how we plan our day and what we do. If we exercise, don't you sometimes feel better after you exercise?
Definitely.
Well, why do you feel better? Nothing to do with your brain.
Yeah, why?
I mean, you're not clearing your brain, relaxing your brain. You just didn't engage in meditation. You did something with your muscles. You exercise it. And those muscle activities of what you're doing with your body and how you're feeling with your body is affecting how your brain feels and how you feel. So this particular study showed that probably we have multiple memories in various organs throughout our body that we know very little about, and they may affect our health and wellness. And if we got a handle on it and studied more, we may have a better way of figuring out how to do things. So here it is. We say, oh, you've got to exercise. Well, that's kind of blanket.
Sure.
It may be that different exercises are useful for your liver, that are useful for your kidney. We know they're good for your muscles. They may be useful for your thyroid. In other words, so it opens up a whole level of research of maybe that we can look at memories that occur within various organs, certainly the endocrine organs in our body. And if we improve their memories, we might improve our health.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's do a voicemail now. This is a caller from the state of Kansas.
Hi, I have a friend who is 31 and has rosacea on the nose. And you can imagine how that impacts socially. He's tried Flagyl and ivermectin topicals. He wears sunscreen religiously when he goes outside. He does have a background of autoimmunity. His dad has severe multiple allergies and cold gluten and so on, and his aunt died from lupus. My question has to do with, can diet make a difference? What else could he be doing to help ameliorate the redness of the nose? Thank you.
So red nose, you can imagine. Any red nose is, from a cosmetic point of view, not good. Mm-hmm. And some people look at that and they think, I wonder what this is. Some people actually think a red nose may be associated with alcoholism. That's sort of an old-fashioned thought. And there are treatments for it. So there are treatments such as Metrogel, which is metronidazole gel, which you put on the nose twice a day. If he hasn't tried doxycycline is an antibiotic, and that can be very effective for rosacea. So if he hasn't tried that for 3 to 6 months, that can be one of the treatments for red nose. And the other thing is, if you're not better, going to a dermatologist in this case is really important because they have other treatments that they can use on and off, because you can develop something called rhinophyma, which is really where you develop major changes within the structure of the nose and the skin of the nose that can become more permanent. And so I think making sure if he doesn't get better, going to a dermatologist or another one. But once again, if he hasn't tried the antibiotic, I would try that. Now, the question was, does food make a difference? For some people, it does.
Oh, yeah.
Some people, alcohol, their nose will turn red. Some people get a flush reaction, so they can look at that. And if so, you avoid those foods that actually do it. If you go to the net, there'll be a number of things, and they'll recommend a whole bunch of different foods, alcohol, as I said, being one of those. But I would try different foods and see whether or not you do it. Anything that makes you blush is going to make rosacea worse. But once again, an antibiotic, if you haven't tried it, such as doxycycline, is worth a 3 to 6 month trial.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's do a listener email. The following question came from Samir, who writes, "Hello, doctor. I've been dealing with a bulging disc for about 8 years, and my doctor prescribed tramadol for the pain. I've been trying to stop taking it, but I'm struggling with withdrawal symptoms. Is it safe to stop tramadol suddenly, or should I taper off? Also, what are the potential long-term side effects of using tramadol over such an extended period? And are there any alternatives for pain management that don't carry the same risks of dependence?"
Well, absolutely. So tramadol is a drug. It's a weak opioid, so it has that same ability to actually make people want to take it all the time. You know, it has a low abuse potential compared to hydrocodone and oxycodone, but it doesn't have a zero abuse potential. It used to be thought of as a zero. It wasn't even scheduled. In other words, scheduled means you didn't have to go through the usual things when you prescribe a controlled substance, but it's now scheduled because we know some people develop a dependency to it. So the answer is, yes, you want to get off of it. So what you want to do, first of all, and we'll talk about getting off of it, is you want to substitute an anti-inflammatory, ibuprofen or naproxen, both available over the counter, or another non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. You want to talk to your doctor about it if you don't want to try the ibuprofen and naproxen yourself. The answer is you can stop it suddenly. You don't have to taper off of it. But many people who are dependent on it want to taper off of it. And the way you do it is you do half the dose, maybe 3 to 4 days, and then half that dose for maybe 3 or 4 days, and then you stop. And you realize your body is going to crave it for a while, and you're going to crave it, and then you substitute. You start with an anti-inflammatory right away. I would double the dose in the bottle. I would take 2 Aleve, generic Aleve tablets, twice a day. I like Aleve better. You can take Tylenol with that. You can take the 650 milligram Tylenol tablets, 1 tablet every 8 hours. Both of those are going to help you with your pain, but getting off of it is a good idea. And if you can't, talk to your doc. There are other medications you can help to help with that withdrawal.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, let's go to a voicemail now. This is from a listener from the Beehive State. Do you know what state that is?
Yeah, Utah.
There it is.
Of course. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I've been to Utah,
the Beehive. Do you want to know why they call them the Beehive State?
Are there a lot of bees there?
No, not at all. Because bees work together as a unit to construct things.
Ah.
It's really part of the whole Mormon influence in Utah, that they work together, they constructed things in the middle of the desert, so they made themselves the Beehive State. I think it's pretty interesting.
All right, let's hear from Utah.
My wife is unable to eat many vegetables at all because of her stomach. She gets really bad flatulence and... So she doesn't eat many vegetables. So I was wondering what could she do to make up for the nutrients that she's not getting. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I mean, you can make up with some of the nutrients by having a good multivitamin, but those are only some of the nutrients. What I would recommend if you find you can't eat veggies because of flatulence is try different veggies, and it may be part of it. You may be able to do it in a smoothie. Might be that you can make a smoothie with a couple of vegetables that do not bother her because your body digests things differently when it's a liquid form. So I would try a smoothie. You might put a little fruit in there because it may taste a little bit better. And I would pick a couple of veggies, try it, see what this works for a day or two, see if that works for a day or two, and see whether or not you can make a difference in flatulence. Now, the other thing is you can use Beano, B-E-A-N-O. And Beano basically is an enzyme that helps you digest certain carbohydrates that are in vegetables. And the flatulence may be not from the micronutrients, but from the carb in there. So you may just try Beano whenever you try a vegetable and see whether or not that reduces the flatulence. But I think I'd try smoothie first, and then if that didn't work, I'd add Beano to it.
Good advice. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to voicemail now. This is from a listener in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
I'm just wondering about this thing in my foot called plantar fasciitis. And I just want to know if it's bad and if I need to go to the hospital or not. And I just want to know more about it for the future. Thank you.
Plantar fasciitis is a common problem, and you don't have to go to the hospital for that. But there are some simple things. So first of all, you don't walk barefooted around the house. So do you walk just in your socks around the house?
Usually, yeah. I don't wear any Crocs or anything. Well, I know you've recommended that in the past.
If you've got plantar fasciitis, you got to wear Crocs. You got to have something with support. A bouncy support and a bouncy sole, because that really does make a difference. So the first thing you do is you don't walk around in your socks around the house. You walk around with something with a bouncy sole. The next thing you do is you look at your shoes. If they're kind of worn out and old, you may need new shoes. Once again, with an arch in there in that shoe, that can make a difference because it's the bounce of this. It's really the bounce of the fascia, the plantar fascia. So if you look at the heel and you go to the front of your foot, the fascia is what connects the heel to the front of the foot, along with a muscle, and that is actually the thing that becomes irritated. And the way to take care of it is to make sure you've got a little bounce in there. And you don't have to go to the hospital. You don't have to take ibuprofen. You've got to change your footwear and not wear socks all the time. Very simple answer. But not simple for people who love to just wear socks in the house. You're smiling.
Yeah, that's me, I guess. But I don't have this issue.
You can do that for the rest of your life until it occurs.
Until it happens. Yes, now I know.
You like wearing socks in the house. Makes you feel good to take off your shoes?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
We're a shoes-off household.
Yeah,
are you?
No, never.
Shoes on.
No, never. Okay. We have shoes on. But shoes off, then you don't have to sweep the houses. You don't have to get rid of the dirt on the floor as much, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
No, we're shoes on. You know, I think it's a new thing. I think it's like a millennial thing.
Is it?
Shoes off, yeah. Or Japanese. Are you Japanese?
No.
No, you're not.
I'm not.
I knew that.
Okay. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413.
My office partner, Dave Okada, his parents were Japanese. They actually met in the internment camp, and they always took off their shoes in the house. It's very much an East Asian thing. But that has become much more common over the years.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, it's become much more common. It actually is a good idea, but I don't always pay attention to good ideas.
Okay. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we clock out today, Zorba, let's end the show on a high note.
Okay.
Good idea. The following note came to us on a postcard from the newly married couple, Seth and Maggie. Check out this postcard. It's the Campbell. Okay. It's from the Campbell River in British Columbia. They sent. Isn't that a lovely card?
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. In BC.
You've been up there, right?
I've been in BC, but I haven't been on this river.
Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So the postcard, Seth and Maggie say.
Yeah.
Dear Dr. Pastor and Carl, we wanted to write you and let you know how much we enjoy your show. My wife and I were even listening to it on our honeymoon to British Columbia, hence the postcard. Your show reaches all ages, as my wife and I are 29 years old. Thank you for your down-to-earth advice and healthy living tips. We appreciate all you do and the knowledge that you dispense. Thank you.
That is so nice.
Sweet.
And writing a postcard in BC when you're on a honeymoon, that is a warm, heartfelt message. That's exactly it. They were listening to it on the boat. I can picture it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the compliment. And how many people actually get it together to write a postcard, put a stamp on it, and send it?
Especially on your honeymoon. You're busy. You got a lot going on.
That is a 10 on the compliment scale. Thank you.
10 out of 10. Thanks, Seth and Maggie. Has Dr. Zorba helped you out? Please share your story with us by posting on our Facebook page or a postcard. Or you could send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Should we do this again next week,
Absolutely.
Zorba?
Absolutely.
Okay. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime on our podcast,
you bet.
Visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org and, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. I thought you'd do more of a jazzy thing for that, since those are jazz guys. There it is. Do some jazz. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.